This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And Troy Sidcock is playing the role of Deb Tribe this morning. She'll be back again next weekend. And we'd love to hear from you this morning. 1300 222 891. Sophie Thompson is in Victoria. Hello, Sophie. What are you doing there?
Good morning, Troy, and good morning, listeners. I'm over here for the Ballarat Begonia Festival, which is on all this long weekend, and celebrating not only beautiful begonias, most of which are tuberous begonias and very showy, but just gardening and getting outside in this beautiful weather.
We'll have a chat about some garden tourism a little bit later on. And coming up after the news at 9 o'clock, Darren Ray's seasonal forecast. We'll take a look back at summer, look ahead at autumn as well. I also have two ABC gardening magazines to give away this morning, and we're here to take your calls. 1300 222 891. A reminder that Sophie's advice is of a general nature and shouldn't be taken as personal professional advice.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Sophie Thompson and Troy Sincock.
Filling in for Deb Tribe on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Top of 27 degrees, mostly sunny in Adelaide today, ranging right up to 37 in Oodnadatta, but generally throughout the state, no rain and either partly cloudy or sunny conditions from the early 20s in Kangaroo Island right up to the mid-30s in places like Coober Pedy. Colette is our next caller from Clearview. How can Sophie help you, Colette?
Good morning, Troy. Good morning, Sophie. I've got a Banksia grandiflora, which I planted in the ground in 2008. I planted two of them in the ground in 2008, growing very well, and one of them literally has turned up its toes in 2 weeks, was starting to shoot, and half it died and the other half died. I scraped it back and there seems to be still some green in the cambium layers.
Yeah.
There's no evidence of spray. It's got lots of water. Everything around it is growing and watered. We've dug down to see if there's root collar rot. Any ideas? It's very weird and it's sudden.
Yeah.
It's 4 metres tall and it's really sudden.
How devastating. I mean, it's like being a garden detective, and it sounds like you've done a bit of this already. So, you know, the first thing is that I would look at is making sure that it didn't get wet feet. You know, was there a drain that blocked, or, you know, a laundry outlet that got clogged, and the soil became, because the soil became super wet, Banksias hate poor drainage. So, you know, that's the first thing you've looked at. It's not drying out, because that wouldn't matter. An established plant would be able to cope with dry seasons. That would be fine. No one's done any trenching nearby?
No, nothing.
No one's done any concreting nearby, you know, like washing a wheelbarrow with lime or anything?
No.
And there's no gas leak nearby. That's the only other thing.
No, the gas thing's next to the other one.
Oh, my gosh. You know,
there's roses there, there's natives next to it, there's vegetables next to it, everything else is alive and winning except for this.
And if there's roses nearby, you don't feed. So bear in mind, Banksia has a different nutritional requirement to roses, and rose fertilizer could be toxic to Banksias?
No. It's a rescue rose, and I just threw it in there because there was a space, and it's fine.
How devastating, really. But, you know, all you can do, if there's still green, you know, maybe whatever happened, it can push through, but maybe not. You know, I don't know what to say. If it's a significant tree as part of your property, you know, it's always worth investing in getting an arborist out to have a look, but they're not necessarily going to be able to, you know, suggest anything either.
I'm going to sit and wait and see. I'm just wondering how long you wait and see. I haven't seen a tree die this quickly unless it's been poisoned with, you know, blackberry killer or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and there's no evidence of that.
And there's no, you know, footpath nearby where the council sprays or, you know, spray.
My verge is completely fully planted and the Port Adelaide council was brilliant. So
Okay. Look, I would give it till spring, right? You know, if you don't see new shoots appearing in spring, and if it was me, I would actually try seaweed-based plant tonics because, you know, they're not a fertilizer as such. So therefore, you know, they don't hurt native plants. What they can do, though, is they can, you know, just trigger new root growth. And new root growth might be, you know, might help the plant shoot on. So if it was me, that's what I'd treat it with. But, you know, give it till by the end of September. If it hasn't shot, I would be doubtful. If it's got, has it got multiple stems or just one stem?
Oh, no. It starts dividing about 2 metres up. So it is a beautiful, both of them are beautiful shaped trees.
Okay. So maybe some of the branches where they go out, try pruning them. See if that stimulates growth. It may not. You know, gardening often reminds us that we are not in control. There's all sorts of things going on that we, you know, aren't aware of that cause things like this. But, you know, poor drainage would certainly be something I'd be looking at. And, you know, there is a condition called Phytophthora, which can affect native plants and it can cause them to die. But, you know, ultimately why that and not the other one? That's the question.
Very weird.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Colette. Heartbreaking when you have something doing really well and then it passes on you.
Colette, thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate you being part of the program. And it really, it does prove, as you said, Sophie, that it's, some things are not in our hands. It's just about doing the detective work and trying a few things along the way.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Vouda. She's in Cumberland Park. A question about your lemon tree, Vouda.
Hi, Sophie, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I have this lemon tree. The question is, what lemon tree, is there a lemon tree species that is more resistant toward the gall wasp? Because I bought this lemon tree a few years ago. It's in a pot. I think it's a Maya. Mm-hmm. And it just fruited abundantly. And all the time, but then it got bitten by a gall wasp, and the poor thing is still trying to, you know, live in fruit. So I was at first treating it with kaolin clay, and then I also was using the gum, the gardener's gum on the galls. And then this season I actually gave up on it and noticed that it was infested even more. So obviously those two things kind of went halfway to work.
Yeah.
There is a neighbour who has a lemon tree in the back neighbour. So I know where the wasps are coming from, but, you know, I don't know. I suspect that he's not going to get rid of his lemon tree. But failing that, I'm just wondering, is there a breed of lemon tree that is less susceptible?
Unfortunately, Valda, no. Now, in the long term, now I don't know whether this is going to be 5 years or 10 years, but I am sure there will be some sort of control that's effective against gall wasp. We just haven't yet got it. And what you were doing, even though you mightn't have necessarily been getting 100% success, you were obviously getting a lot more success than not doing anything. So having a lemon tree that is in a pot that you can control, you can cut all the galls off, or you can spray with kaolin clay to make it unattractive when the wasps emerge. And then if you have got a gall, smearing it with the horticultural glue so that as they come out, they get stuck. So in answer to your question, no, there's not a cultivar that is less affected in terms of lemons. But if you do the treatment, it is effective. So I would simply, you know, whether you can retrieve your lemon, you know, whether you can cut it back hard, get rid of everything and just let it reshoot and say, okay, I'm not going to get fruit for a little bit because I've done such a big prune on it. But then from then on, manage it with kale and clay and everything. You know, I would just be thorough with it. And the challenge is, I mean, I talked to my colleague, Jerry Colby-Williams up in Queensland, and they've had it for a lot longer. And they find if you can get all your neighbours to work together, if everyone gets rid of it, you know, it's not a significant problem. But the challenge comes when someone doesn't, and then, you know, you cop the brunt of it.
Yeah, well, I think I'll try visiting the neighbour and see where I can negotiate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good on you, Valda. Yeah. Well, great question.
Thanks,
and good luck.
Thanks very much for your call. 1-300-222-891 to speak to Sophie Thompson on ABC Talkback Gardening. Message from Sarah in Beulah Park. Sophie, pertinent to the caller whose tree had died, and we were exploring all sorts of different things that could be the cause of that. Sarah mentions that we had citronella lamps near a plant and we think the oil spilled and made a plant very ill.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, see, anything that goes on the soil. I once had a client, we were looking at a patch of garden and, you know, plants were just not happy and you know, they weren't dying, but they were sick. And in the end, it was near her front veranda and she had been mopping her front veranda with disinfectant, you know, like cleaning products and disinfectant and throwing the water on the garden. Mm. So that was killing all the life in the soil, which meant that the plants are going, ooh, you know, and they were quite seedy because of it. So everything we put on the soil, we've got to think, is it good for the soil or bad for the soil?
Exactly. Jeff is in Ceduna. How can we help you with your plum tree, Jeff?
G'day, Troy. G'day, Sophie. Well, I've got two plum trees. They're relatively young. One's a Satsuma and one's a Narrabeen, you know, in the same hole, so they pollinate, all that stuff. We actually, they're a couple of years old. We got our first few little fruit off them this year, but they got a little bit sort of cooked in summer, a little bit of crispy leaves and stuff like that. Not overly concerned, bit of shaked off. But the other day, and I can't remember whether it was just before or just after the rain that we had last weekend, but they're flowering. And I'm thinking, this is mental.
Well, so is getting significant rain in, you know, February and you know, in arid areas. Yeah. I mean, you get an occasional dump. So, yeah, they're totally out of whack because of the rain. And I wouldn't worry about it. You know, the plants will sort themselves out. They're only young. You know, as they get bigger and create a bit more shade for themselves, you know, the a little bit of leaf burn won't be so much. I mean, we're talking plum trees. They are incredibly hardy and long term they'll be fine, but they're just out of whack because they don't know what season it is.
Oh, that's good. I thought they were sort of in their death throes or something. Cause they look like,
you know, no, I wouldn't think that at all. No. I would just think that, you know, they've had rain and they're going to, they think, oh, you know, rain's come. It must be springtime.
Okay, no, that's good. Thank you, Sophie.
Thanks for your call,
good
Jeff.
On you,
1-300-222-891. After 9 o'clock, Darren Ray's seasonal forecast. We'll take a quick look back at summer, look ahead at autumn as well. I've also got two ABC gardening magazines to give away this morning. That is before 9:30. If you'd like to join Sophie on the show and if you need some advice, 1-300-222-891. Sophie Thompson's in Ballarat for the Begonia Festival. Garden tourism, it's a thing, Sophie.
It is a thing, and it's a thing that is taken really seriously overseas in America and the UK. You know, garden tourism is one of the major types of tourism because as gardeners, when we go somewhere, or you know, we love to see gardens. And I'm over here at the Ballarat Begonia Festival. I mean, this is a festival that started in 1953. And what people are going to see is primarily what we call tuberous begonias. So they're very big showy begonias. They have, you know, flowers that are bigger than giant grapefruits. And there'll be 600 of them flowering primarily in a big glass house. And yet they've created an event all around it. It's held at the Ballarat Botanical Gardens. The whole gardens look stunning. And this is a botanical garden that's funded by the council. So this whole event is funded by the council. I mean, there's gardening workshops, gardening talks, there's sales food, and it's a free event. So people just love getting out and seeing things. And it reminds me, a few years ago I went to Toowoomba Carnival of Flowers and I heard the investment the government and council put into that event. But it, you know, the return was millions of dollars of benefit to the community because everyone goes up in spring to Toowoomba to see, you know, all these open gardens, all these parklands that are done. And ultimately, the more money you can bring into a community, the better. So, you know, I'm a big fan of visiting gardens. Wherever I go, whether there's a garden festival or not, I'll always be checking out the local gardens. And, you know, it just reminded me of how South Australia really punched above our weight, in particular the Adelaide Botanic Gardens, when Chihuly's exhibition was on. And there were people from all over Australia coming to see it, you know, and that was that beautiful blend of gardeners coming to see the art and art lovers coming to see the garden.
I suppose it's a matter of just getting people over the threshold, isn't it? Perhaps if you don't see yourself as a garden or a gardener, or perhaps you own an apartment where you don't necessarily have a front or backyard, but then when you get people to botanic gardens and you realise the serenity, just how beautiful it is, perhaps it gives people pause to think, how can I take some of what I'm seeing here and how can I implement it at my own place?
Absolutely. Or if you, like you said, if you live in an apartment and you haven't got a garden, you know, do take advantage of our beautiful gardens. I mean, in Australia, visiting botanic gardens is free. If you go to the UK, it's about 50, I can't remember if it's £50 or $50.
Wow.
You know, it's a significant cost to go to any of those beautiful gardens. And, you know, even not only our beautiful gardens, we've got Adelaide Botanic Gardens, we've got Mount Lofty Botanic Gardens and Wirtunga up at Blackwood, but we've also got places like Veal Gardens, which is an absolute treat, and lots of other gardens around. And I was just watching a segment that screened a couple of weeks ago about Arid Lands Botanic Gardens up at Port Augusta, and it featured, you know, Brian Reichelt, and it was a fabulous story basically about how gardens, wherever you are an absolute haven and a great place to learn, a great place to go and feel better, but celebrate how amazing nature is.
I remember being so surprised by the British actor who played C-3PO, the golden robot in Star Wars, that he was here in South Australia. I'm like, what is C-3PO doing in South Australia? I think he even went across to Kangaroo Island. And I think the reason was that his wife was just an avid gardener and part of all sorts of gardening societies and that kind of thing. And what got C-3PO from Star Wars here to South Australia was his wife's love of the garden.
See, it's a thing.
It really is.
And garden tourism is fantastic. And it's, you know, it's not only motorsport or, you know, football.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that will travel for gardens and, you know, celebrate the beauty of plants and nature.
And, of course, WOM Adelaide this long weekend in Botanic Park as well, which is just a stunning setting for that music festival. 1-300-222-891 ABC Talkback Gardening. My name's Troy Sincock, filling in for Deb Tribe. She's back next weekend. Sophie Thompson is our expert this morning, taking your calls. 1-300-222-891. Carolyn, how can we help you with compost?
Oh, good morning. Look, I've just got a native garden that's just, you know, had a good downfall, but I just wanted something that needs to kind of compost the garden to keep all the moisture in, or something that I can just lay, because I haven't really kind of laid anything down since I planted it all out about 3 years ago.
So I would say if you've got a native garden, you don't actually want compost. Really,
no,
what we're looking for is mulch.
So,
you know, buy mulch, just any sort of woody mulch that you can get. And the finer the mulch, the shorter time it remains, whereas if you put, you know, a coarser mulch, it will stay longer. And so, you know, if you can get, you know, what I call tree lopper mulch, you know, you see a tree crew, if you can get something like that and even let it age, theoretically you let it age for 3 months, you know, that would be great. Or if you buy one of the commercially produced woody mulches, but I would be looking for something coarser rather than fine.
Okay, terrific.
Before you go, Caroline, are you out for a walk today, are you?
I am. I'm actually walking in the back streets of Wongaree on the Eyre Peninsula.
How beautiful.
But yeah, been off for a swim actually today somewhere.
I heard some very prominent footsteps there in the background. And wondered where you were. It sounds just beautiful where you are. Off to Port Pirie now. Hello, David.
Yeah, I've got a kangaroo paw and I've sent some photos in. A kangaroo thorn, sorry, tree. I just want to know the best time to prune it.
Yeah, so what I think you've got is Acacia acinacea, and it does have very fine spikes and they're pretty brutal. I've planted a lot out at my place. And so ideally when we're pruning things like that, we say the best time to do it is after flowering. So that's back in winter, spring. So if you need to do some pruning now, you could, but the risk is you're going to be cutting off wood that would flower otherwise. So if you could...
It would die back a bit too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So if you could, I'd wait till after it flowers and then give it a haircut. And, you know, we talked about it before. You know, you're far better to prune... If they're in a garden setting and you've got local native plants, you're far better to prune them a little bit every year rather than leave it for 10 years and then try and prune them.
No, that's all right, because I've only had it for a few years and it's just started to be a little bit of a pain.
Okay, yeah, they are... They are quite, it could also be Acacia paradoxa, but both of those, you'd wait till after flowering.
Thank you for your call, David, 1-300-222-891. If, like David, you'd like to be part of the show. Trevor from Greenock says, about visiting gardens, the Barossa Bush Gardens are always open 7 days a week, daylight hours. Note, nurture nature because nature nurtures.
Absolutely. And Trevor is the best PR for Barossa Bush Gardens. I can picture his smiling face. And I thought, you know, when I was listing off those places, I thought, I'm going to forget a whole lot of places. So thank you for reminding me. Barossa Bush Gardens is amazing. If you're, you know, near where I live in the Mallee region, Mildander, which is actually near Canberra, is this amazing property. People can do free camping there. And it's this extraordinary collection of local native plants. So, you know, these places are out there. You just enjoy them.
Yes, if there's another one that we haven't listed this morning, perhaps let us know, 1-300-222-891. Off to Meningie now. Andrea, Sophie is here to take your call.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Sophie. My question is, I had a large pride of Madeira that was 24 years old and it died last year. It just, turned up its toes. I don't know the lifespan, but I was just wondering, no weeds or anything seemed to grow where it was. And I was just wondering, do they affect the soil or can I plant something else there?
Absolutely, you can plant something else there. And actually, if you had one that lived to 24 years old, that is fantastic because I find they're quite short-lived. You know, you often only get 10 years out of them and then they go and they're this, for people that don't know them, they grow really quickly and really big, you know, and they can get 3 to 5 metres across, 2 metres high, and suddenly when they die, you're left with this huge space. Now, usually they will have self-seeded underneath. Did yours leave babies for you or not?
Everywhere else but underneath it.
Okay, because usually there's one to replace it, you see. So in your case, you know, the thing is they grow, they're a big plant and they would have taken nutrients out of the soil. So all I'd be doing is get some, you know, aged animal manure, depending what you're going to plant. If you're going to plant local native plants, I wouldn't. But if you're going to plant, you know, other plants, I'd get some aged animal manure, some compost. You know, if you haven't got aged animal manure, you could just get some pelletized chicken manure-based fertilizer. Throw it around and you'll be able to plant there and things will be fine. You know, it's just been robbed of nutrients. So if you supply more nutrients, plants will grow.
Andrea, thank you for your call. Of course, you're in Ballarat visiting the Begonia Festival today, Sophie. Well, Rowena from Goolwa has a memory. She said she was at school in Ballarat in 1989-90 for the Begonia Festival and played in a collective schools orchestra belting out the 1812 Overture, including cannons blasting on the Saturday night. She said it wasn't quite as delicate as the beautiful begonias, but a very happy memory nonetheless.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting. Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And, you know, they've really engaged everyone. So not only by having activities for families and kids and adults, but all the schools have been involved, and they've got these giant fiberglass snails that are about a metre high, and all the different schools or childcare facilities have decorated them. Oh, so you can go around and see them. And then there's, you know, garden beds, which were created by primary schools. And then high schools have done something else. And, you know, they've had to design gardens, and it's fantastic.
Get them young, get them early. That's the way. Okay, we're talking hydrangeas now with Peter from Hackney. How can Sophie help you?
Sophie, good morning. We repotted some rather large hydrangeas 2 years ago, and we cut them back fairly hard, with the result that we didn't get very many flowers. They've now taken off. We've had a wonderful flowering season. I've noticed that the soil level in the pots has dropped, and I'm wondering whether you can replace that from the top or whether you've got to go through the whole exercise again. The other question is how far we can cut them back. They're about, or nearly two, or one's nearly 2 metres high. The other one's probably a bit more than half that. Whether one seems to be doing better than the other, one gets a bit more sun than the other, or whether we should alternate their positions. So okay, it's a question of soil level, whether we can add it from the top, how far back we need to prune them without losing next year's flowers, and whether we should reposition them.
Okay. So two things that I just need to clarify. How old did you say they were?
Oh, they've been in pots for probably 25 or more years.
Okay.
They were repotted 2 years ago.
Okay. So if the soil levels drop by, say, you know, an inch, a couple of centimetres, you could just put that on from the top. If it's dropped significantly, you might be better to actually repot them. And if, you know, at the moment they've still got leaves on and probably the aged flowers on. So, if you're going to do it.
Actually, just sprung a couple of beautiful new pink flowers.
Oh, wow. How interesting. Well, if you're going to prune them now, so, there's lots of different ways of pruning hydrangeas. Some people prune them in wintertime. Some people prune them in autumn. So the trick is that you prune the stems that have flowered, you cut back, and the ones that haven't flowered, you don't prune. So depending how big they are, I certainly like the idea of swapping them around. If one's growing better than the other, I would swap them around so they get a bit more light or, you know, to balance that out. But as far as whether you need to repot now or you wait till winter, if you're actually going to have to lift them out of the pots to repot them, I would wait till winter.
Thanks for your call.
Or at least, you know, May, something like that.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Sophie Thompson and Troy Sencock.
Filling in for Deb Tribe on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Yes, and Deb Tribe back again next Saturday. You can join me and Sophie until 9:30 this morning. Sophie's taking your calls on 1300 222 891, SMS 0467 922 891. And Sophie, you're gearing up for the Ballarat Begonia Festival today.
I am. It's going to be beautiful gardening weather. It's only about 21 degrees over here, and it's held in the beautiful Ballarat Botanic Gardens. I actually went for a tour around yesterday and was blown away by how the whole gardens is looking amazing. The gardening horticultural team of the council have done an incredible job. So I'm going along and talking to visitors and looking forward to being part of this family-friendly event.
We were talking earlier about some of the other gardens that you could explore this Adelaide Cup Long Weekend. We heard from Trevor that suggested the Barossa. We've received a message from Sarah who said there's also the Nangawuka Flora Reserve at Victor Harbour maintained by volunteers.
That is fantastic too. And, you know, wherever you go, there are these gardens that are an absolute treasure. They wouldn't exist without volunteers. Another one is Pangarinda Botanic Gardens, which is is at Wellington East. And, you know, there's amazing places. And then, of course, there's all the national parks because, you know, ultimately that's nature's garden.
Exactly. We're here until 9:30 this morning talking gardening, and I've got two ABC gardening magazines to give away this morning. But ultimately, we're here to take your calls on 1300 222 891. And remember that Sophie's advice is of a general nature and shouldn't be taken as personal professional advice.
This is Talkback Gardening with Sophie Thompson and Troy Sincock.
Filling in for Deb Tribe on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Joining me now is independent climatologist Darren Ray for his look ahead at the weather forecast. Good morning, Darren.
G'day, g'day, Troy, and to all the listeners out there.
Now, I can't believe we're in autumn already.
Yeah, summer seems to have, whipped by. We end up with pretty much as I was sort of suggesting, you know, warm and average summer, dry, so temperatures about 2 degrees above average. We had that heat wave in the end of January. Mm. But yeah, pretty dry, Troy. And so we had a big rain event just at the end of November, so just ahead of summer, and then we just came into autumn with a sort of another first thing that rained for a little bit for Adelaide just last weekend, and you know, quite a big rain event for the interior parts of the state as well. So that's got some relevance in terms of what we're going to see over the next through the rest of autumn. Mm. In terms of the normally through summer we get a couple of pulses of significant tropical activity, usually with something called the Maninune Oscillation. So I've spoken about that before on the show. So the MJO, and that's basically a pulse of tropical activity that moves along the equator from the Indian Ocean across northern Australia and into the Pacific. When it gets across northern Australia, sort of off Broome, that's when it can basically inject moisture across the country. And if there's a weather system coming through at the right time, that can mean there's lots of moisture for that weather system to turn into rain. And that happened in November. And then we had another sort of go during summer in January, but it didn't link up to a weather system. And then we had this event just in the last, you know, about a week ago, where it all did come together. So that's really what drove the sort of pattern we saw through summer. Mm. The other thing is we were in a La Nina event through the second half of last year, but we're starting to transition really rapidly in the Pacific Ocean towards an El Nino event. So that's really going to shape the second half of this year. So, that's really kind of things we're seeing as the background at the moment.
Yeah, so a bit of a warmer start to March. How are we going to go for the remainder of this month?
Yeah, so a touch warmer, but we're past the period when we see really, you know, we're starting to get very close to that sort of period when temperatures really start dropping very rapidly. Mm. And so, like over the next sort of week or two, we're seeing relatively mild conditions. So, you know, don't put away your shade cloth, but because there will still be some days in the sort of mid-30s. Our chance of heat waves is basically very minimal in terms of extended heat. So just lots of, you know, temperatures in the sort of mid to high 20s, and it's getting up into the sort of low 30s up in the occasional day or so into the sort of mid 30s. So, you know, over the next, we've got relatively mild conditions this weekend, and it warms up a little bit during the week for a couple of days, sort of Tuesday, Wednesday. Chains come through Wednesday night. There's a little bit of a chance of some rain Wednesday night, that cools down again back into the sort of mid-20s. So that sort of pattern through the rest of March, Troy, is back to what we're expecting. We're in a sort of pattern. Once an MJO event comes through, everything tends to get a bit suppressed for rainfall. So there's not much in the way of significant rain showing up over the next couple of weeks.
So given that it was a drier summer and looks like we won't have significant rainfall, if you don't have mains water, then you might start to just keep an eye on things?
Yeah, well, I'm on tank water, and yeah, things got a bit touch and go, and so that rain event was really useful. But there's not heaps behind that. We might get sort of a few millimetres, maybe 5 millimetres out of this event next week if you're lucky. Overall for March, I think we'll probably come in with maybe, so below average, maybe 10 millimetres or so for Adelaide, and maybe a touch more up in the hills. But there is a little bit more chance of some tropical activity in the last week of March. So again, we just watch out for that end of the month. But overall, yeah, warm and average March, but not extreme, so maybe a degree above average. We're really at that time of year where March temperatures, you start out averaging about 27. By the end of the month, you get their average is about 24. So this time of year, through March, through autumn, we see temperatures at the end of the month being about sort of 3 to 4 degrees cooler than what they were at the start of the month. So it really drops really quickly. So overall, pretty pleasant month to be out in the garden, just not heaps of rain.
What about the months ahead as we look towards the end of autumn, April and May? What can we expect there?
Yeah, so again, not heaps of tropical activity in April. There's a little bit again in the last week of the month showing up. And so people, like farmers, often look out for, Anzac Day, April 25th, as a period where we often get a reasonable rain event. There's probably a little bit of a chance of that this year, but it's not looking super strong. And, so April overall, milder at the start and then warming up in the second half for that time of year. So basically temperatures... maintain themselves a little bit warmer than average, not extreme, but warmer than average. So that's great for people who've still got crops in, or even looking to get away, some early winter crops. Again, not heaps of rainfall for April. Possibly a little closer to average, but I still suspect we'll come in below average. So maybe 20 millimetres for rainfall for Adelaide. And then May. So one of the things, Troy... as I mentioned, we're starting to see this transition towards El Nino, and I think that's probably that might start biting in terms of rainfall, in terms of impacts on conditions, as we get towards the end of autumn in May and into June. And so, look, the modelling's got this transition in the Indian Ocean towards something that's to a pattern, the positive IOD, which suppresses rainfall. And so there's a little bit, we've got the two things going on in May. We've got this little bit more chance of some tropical activity through weeks 2-3. But at the same time, we're also seeing this transition towards positive Indian Ocean Dipole or IOD pattern, which suppresses rainfall. So we've got two things fighting against each other. So it's going to be a tricky one. But in terms of a significant break for the rain, I'm thinking the second week of May. Mm-hmm. So for the farmers who are really looking for a decent rain, that's probably the best chance to get things away. But looks like we'll start to see that transition towards El Nino acting against rainfall as well. So a bit of a tricky one. And temperatures, the temperatures look a little, warmer than average, probably tending drier than average, but a bit more of a chance of being closer to average. So overall, I think a warmer than average, drier than average autumn, low frost risk, and just, very pleasant for the garden, but just, challenges around water. And so just to finish off, Troy, just for the second half of the year, just watch out for that El Nino, because there's every indication we're going to go into El Nino possibly before we get to start of winter. So warmer than average, drier than average winter, and particularly the case for that for spring, hotter than average, drier than average. Water's going to be, I think, increasingly an issue by the time we get to the end of this year, Troy. So anyway, one to watch out for.
Darren Ray, independent climatologist, thank you. Very comprehensive, and appreciate your forecast looking ahead for the remainder of autumn.
Thanks, Troy.
It's 16 past 9 on ABC Talkback Gardening. Troy Sincock filling in for Deb Tribe. She'll be back again next weekend after a much-deserved week off. Sophie Maggie is from Newton. What's your question, Maggie?
Good morning, Sophie. I've got two questions. I've been a bit cheeky. I've got two questions, but hopefully they're little ones. The first one is about red spider mite on sage, one of which is edible. And I've been looking online, and I've got neem oil, eco oil, and I don't know whether to use dishwash liquid as well to spray. Can you advise me, please?
Okay, well, even, if you didn't have those products, even just squirting your hose under the foliage, will reduce their numbers. If you do that 2 or 3 days in a row, mites hate moisture, okay? Mites like dry, dusty conditions. And so the heat waves that we've had are perfect for mites. So if you did that, as far as using one of your sprays, I'd just use Eco Oil. And that will, you know, but you have to spray under the foliage and that will work really well. So the other thing you could do is, you know, if your plant's got mites, it's a little bit stressed. So a little bit of seaweed-based plant tonic just to perk it up a bit and it'll be fine.
Okay, thank you very much. The next question's a bit more complicated. I've got this lemon tree, which is very healthy and it's had lots of lemons, but it's too big and there's crossing branches, interior and everything, and it just needs pruning, quite a big prune to reduce the height so I can get to the lemons, get rid of the gall wasp that's there and the crossing interior branches. And also there was a tree next door which was encroaching. So one side, there's no branches, so it's out of balance now. But I've cut back next door's tree. So that's like there's a big gap that side now. So just wanted your advice on what to do and when to do it as well, yeah.
Well, you could either do it now or you could wait till after, you know, springtime. So, but when you wouldn't do it is in wintertime, okay? So if you can get it done now, if you can get someone in to give you a hand with that, if it's a big pruning job, and then you'll find that as you're pruning the plant, it starts to reshoot, it will try and fill in that hole too, you know. It'll try and fill in where the gap is.
Great. Okay. It's not something I could do myself. I need to get some.
Depends how big it is, Maggie. You know, it depends how big it is. You know, you don't like upper ladder pruning something is never ideal.
It's a Eureka lemon. Yeah.
And that, you know, Eureka is a wonderful lemon, but quite vigorous. So, and it's got that quite strong upright growth. So, yeah. You know, maybe you do need someone to come and give you a hand with that one.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's great advice.
Thanks for your call, Maggie.
All the best, Maggie.
1-300-222-891 to speak to Sophie Thompson on ABC Talkback Gardening. I have two ABC gardening magazines to give away this morning and well, one of them could be yours. All you have to do is give us a call now, 1-300-222-891, and we'll take a couple of people at random to win yourself one of two ABC gardening magazines, 1-300-222-891. Before we go to Tony, Sophie, a message from Jackie at West Croydon, just letting us know that she received her fortnightly email for John Lamb's Good Gardening yesterday, and sadly, the next newsletter on the 20th of March, apparently will be John's last edition. And she just wanted to pass on her thanks and congratulations, hoping that John might be listening this morning for providing all the informative, free and interesting information in that newsletter over the years. Because, of course, John has really educated so many people to become better home gardeners, providing people with what they need to get the best results from their garden.
Absolutely. And actually, I hate to say that because the newsletter came in yesterday, it's sitting unopened in my email box and I hadn't read that yet. So thank you for letting us know. That will be, you know, very sad because John has been an absolute legend and just amazing. So, yes, thank you.
Thanks for letting us know, Jackie. 1-300-222-891. Just under 10 minutes of the program to go. So if you would like some advice in the garden, given that you've got this long weekend to get out there amongst it, 27 degrees in Adelaide and really no expectation of rain right across South Australia today, partly cloudy in some areas and very sunny in others. Tony is in Marion. You need some advice about a hanging basket, Tony.
I've got this magnificent galvanised huge hanging basket. I've got two of them, and they're 21 inches in width and 12
inches they're big.
Deep.
Mm. Yep.
And I've got this Koya coconut matting from one of the hardware stores, and I want to know how to cut it to size that it will fit deep inside without wasting too much of the coconut matting.
Okay, so this is like a coconut pizza matting that comes like a roll?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, can I just say one thing about coconut matting? I do love the look of the coir matting inside a hanging basket, but I also know that birds love it too. and they love to pull at it, and then they line their nests with it. So as long as you know that it may not last in the long term, right? So sometimes you can get these coir liners that are sort of already formed in plastic. Otherwise, if it's the one that you cut yourself, you do, you know, you need to make a circle and then do a slit in it and wrap it around. But two things you could consider. One is to put a plastic, some sort of plastic on the inside of the coir. And the reason for that is that coir dries out really quickly through the sides. So the plant you put in that hanging basket is going to need to be watered daily, possibly twice a day, because it will dry out so much. So if you can get some plastic, you know, it could be an old garbage bag or something. You're not going to see this. This is on the inside of the coir. Line it. Make sure there's holes down the bottom because we still want it to drain, but we just don't want it to dry out so much, and that can work quite well. Now, the other thing I've seen people do, and this doesn't look as attractive, is they actually line the basket with plastic on the outside, you know, inside of the metal, but so you can see it, because of the birds pulling apart the coir. So that is, you know, if you say, look, I haven't got many birds in my garden, but if you say, look, I've got lots of blackbirds and lots of other birds in my garden, they may well pull your coir apart to line their nest. So I don't want to be negative, but that's something to consider. You might even, you know, if you had some shea cloth, you could put shea cloth, which they can't get to, in the coir on the inside.
That's what I was thinking about, the old pieces of shea cloth, line it with shea cloth first, then put the coir on top.
Okay. Yeah, that will stop the birds trying to get to it. But I'd still consider lining it with plastic on the inside of that as well, because, ultimately what we're wanting the basket, we're not wanting it to dry out so much. So what are you planning to plant in it, Tony?
Colourful plants like petunias or
something like that. Okay, so then they definitely don't want to dry out so much. So it's not so, you know, as we're going into winter, it's not so bad. But over summer, you know, petunias in a hanging basket will need to be watered twice a day. So, you know, that's why putting the plastic on the inside, making sure you've still got drainage holes in the bottom, is ideal. So good luck with that, Tony. Sounds like you got your project sorted for the weekend.
Absolutely. Thanks for your call, Tony. Let's head to Adelaide's northern suburbs. In Salisbury is James, and we're talking apricot trees, James.
Yeah, my mum has a pretty old one, and it looks like it's almost dead, but it had some green shoots coming out, maybe about half a metre from the trunk, and it looks like maybe it's been cut off before and shot out from that area, like a big chunk. Yeah, so I wondered if that's what someone had done previously and now I could do that again, or whether it's like it's just a lost cause and I should just take it out.
Oh, that's so hard to know. If the main tree has – so the main tree's definitely dead?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's like all the leaves are like just crumbled up, and I think it could – I haven't like cut too much off yet, but yeah, a little bit. And
yeah. Okay, so there's a disease called gummosis, which tends to take old apricots – well, it tends to take apricots out, and what it can do is your tree can look healthy and suddenly a whole branch goes brown, you know, the leaves almost crisp within a couple of days. And if it is gummosis, you do need to get rid of the tree. What you're describing, it's hard to know whether those suckers are you know, the rootstock that's coming up, whether your mum's apricot was a grafted tree or whether it was a seedling tree, or whether those shoots that are coming up a bit away, they could actually be where apricots dropped and the stones germinated. So it might pay to, you know, just give them a go. Let a couple of them live for a year or two and see if you get fruit off them. I mean, the great thing about stone fruit is they usually fruit within a couple of years. So it sounds like the parent tree, it's time for it to go. If you cut a limb and you see black in the middle, that means it probably does have gummosis, in like it's a dark sort of colour in the trunk. And it would be worth making sure you disinfect your tools before you go and cut another limb with it, because you could spread it to another tree.
Thanks for being lucky last today, James in Salisbury. Appreciate your call. And thank you for everyone who's participated in ABC Talkback Gardening. In about 20 minutes' time, I'll be speaking to Brian Haywood about a colony of butterflies in Victoria Park. And Sophie, you're the patron of the Butterfly Conservation Society.
I am, and we've talked about these amazing butterflies thought to be extinct, the checkered copper butterfly, and the whole life cycle. You know, there's a festival, the Checkered Copper Butterfly Festival, that celebrates these amazing butterflies brought back from the edge, but there's, you know, they're under threat at the moment. So I'm glad that you're having that chat to Brian, and please, listeners, hang in and listen to it, because, you know, conserving nature and bringing it back from the brink is so important.
Congratulations to Jocelyn in Mount Barker and Jenny in Nuriupa, who have won themselves an ABC Gardening Australia magazine. And you're off to the Ballarat Begonia Festival today. Lucky you, Sophie.
Absolutely. And I won't be doing radio tomorrow. My schedule doesn't work, but I'll be back next Saturday and look forward to talking with Deb then. But lovely working with you again, Troy. Always lots of fun.